I've got this image of him walking down the hallways of the Louvre, the hallowed, you know, corridors, and he's looking at these artwork, and he goes like, I can take him on. I could totally take her on. And then he's like, who's this guy? Who's this Wing for? Who's this Van Gogh character? 10 minutes, tops. Wait, he did what with his ear? Okay, 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Got it. Welcome to Death Watch, the Star Wars podcast from a galaxy not so far away. I'm Chris Skull, and today we're joined by friend of the show, V. Antonioli. She's going to talk about one of the more intriguing characters of the Star Wars universe, Grand Admiral Thrawn. So before we jump in, we want to announce some really great news. There's a new child of the watch. Mike and his wife had a baby last week. We hope for the best for this latest addition to the Bennett family. So as we've seen on screen, Thrawn primarily is in the Rebels show. He's the lead antagonist for seasons 3 and 4. However, we got a major name drop in chapter 13, The Jedi of The Mandalorian. So Ahsoka is seeking him out as a person of interest for reasons unknown. But today we're going to go into the history of the character, how he fits in the Star Wars timeline, and we're going to discuss if and where we might see him next. But before we do that, let's introduce V. So V, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I am V. Antonioli. I'm also an Alderaan survivor, if you've seen me on social media somewhere. I've been a Star Wars fan for better part of 20 years. I remember seeing The Phantom Menace in theaters when I was 5. So Star Wars is pretty near and dear to my heart. And I really love talking about it, especially Thrawn. He's a little newer to me, but it just resonated with me as soon as I started reading the books. He's just a great character. I can't wait to talk about him.
You actually have, if you're listening on the podcast, she actually has like stacks of books right behind her, and a little Thrawn figurine too.
Yes.
Which you got from Galaxy's Edge, right?
I did. Yeah. I can't believe I found that. I was shocked. The little shops in Blackspire Outpost, I just walked in there and I was like, Blue. That's my guy.
That's my chissy.
Yeah. The lady working at the shop was like, I knew he looked familiar. I was in like all Thrawn get up with my Thrawn Disney ears and everything.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Thrawn bounding?
Yes.
I guess. Yeah. So I like to ask icebreaker questions to my guests. Sort of have the tradition of asking about your favorite Star Wars movies and maybe your least favorite. So if you can, give me your top three and then maybe your least favorite.
Of the movies?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it can also include the, I guess there's been like these lists I've participated in. I would include Clone Wars and Rebels.
Okay.
Because they, like in their entirety, they're almost cinematic. So yeah. If you want to include those two, you know, those as well, you can.
So I feel like it changes all the time. It's kind of like picking a favorite child. You don't want to, but like there's kind of that one that's
yeah.
Out,
oh, you know? No, absolutely.
So I would have to say right now, Rebels has got to be my favorite just in its entirety. I feel like the first season was kind of slow, but it was good overall.
Yeah.
Some of the most heartbreaking moments happened in that movie. So, or in that movie, in the show.
It practically is a movie.
It's basically a movie.
Yeah.
It's like four whole movies. Mm-hmm. And then I would have to say Phantom Menace, purely for the nostalgic factor. I think that it is an interesting movie, like film wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, that like movie making wise, it's interesting. But it's nostalgic. And then I would have to say Empire Strikes Back as my third favorite.
I feel like on average that one gets a lot of love. It's never number one, but it's definitely top three.
I've
started noticing that. Phantom Menace, I get it, because it was different. I mean, I don't, that was probably, you saw, did you see that in theaters when it first came out?
Yeah, I was 5 and I went with my dad. It's just, it's just nostalgic. I remember when I went, I didn't have any prior knowledge of Star Wars. So I just thought that was the first Star Wars movie. And then I think I was maybe like 10 or 11 when I mm-hmm. finally found out there were more movies.
Oh, that blew your mind.
I was shocked. Yeah. And I was like, why do they look so old? What number is this? How do they do that? So
what's up with the dude with the horns?
Right.
What's your least favorite?
Least favorite, that this was my favorite question that you asked, Alan. What's your least favorite and why is it The Last Jedi? Yeah. I think I'm gonna have to say The Last Jedi because I have only seen it maybe twice.
That's actually one more time than I've seen it.
I for the sequels in general, I don't really have a connection to them. Just because, you know, kind of growing up with all of the other ones and then the sequels show up and it's just different. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say they're bad. I love the movies. Well,
at least The Last Jedi. I would say that. But I would agree with you. I grew up on the VHS tapes of the original trilogy, and then I saw the prequels as a teen. It really was just different. So it's always gonna be 50-50.
Right.
It's like you like it or you don't.
Right.
So I got another question for you. Okay. If you had 24 hours to live as any Star Wars character, who would it be and why is it Jar Jar Binks?
So you know what, I hadn't thought about that. Misa Likey. Can you imagine? That would actually be pretty fun to be down with the frog people in the Gungan city.
They're called Gungans V.
You know, I that's a good question. So I've been thinking about it. Probably, oh God, I'm going to butcher her name. So with the Chiss names, it's going to be a lot of butchering today.
better you than me.
But her name is Mithali Astov. She is one of the primary characters in Chaos Rising. She's such a cool character.
Isn't she one, they call them the Skywalkers?
Mm-hmm. She's a former Skywalker. Okay. You could also call them Navigators. I was kind of trying to figure out how to explain this concept that wasn't like too hard to explain. But yeah, she's a former Skywalker, former Chiss Navigator. And she kind of comes into her own power in the book. And she kind of gets this different role. It's the new Chaos Rising books are just very different from the regular Star Wars universe. So if you don't really resonate with the Star Wars galaxy, you can always just hop in into the unknown regions, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff there. So
yeah.
But she's a fantastic character. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they were force sensitive, right?
To a degree. The Chaos Rising book really gave me another perspective on force sensitivity and how that manifests differently in different people. For example, you know, the Chiss, they have either second or third sight. I believe third sight is the one where it's just precognition, which is essentially what Anakin was using when he was pod racing. That's, you know, foresight, where you can kind of see what's happening before it happens and he can navigate the pod racer. Second sight is, I believe you can, it's something about feeding off of emotions, or you can kind of feel what the other person's feeling, or
like
something
an empath.
Like that. Yeah, something like that. And I can't remember if that goes with like, yeah, I can never remember what this one's called when you lift things up and stuff.
Telekinesis.
Telekinesis, yes.
Right.
I can't remember if that includes telekinesis or not. So
I think that is literally telekinesis. Telepathy is when you're doing like mind reading. That's so it's like
yes,
Professor yes. X versus Jean Grey kind of.
Yes. So with Mithaliastov or Thalias, that's her core name. Core name is Thalias. She was a former chess navigator who had third sight. That she could navigate and she could do all that stuff. But by the time that they are, I think 13 or 14, they lose that ability. Mm. They no longer have it. So she turns into a, I can't remember what they're called. They're basically caretakers for the young Chiss Skywalkers. The
okay.
names that come up.
Like mentors almost.
Sort of, yeah. They're like live-in nannies kind of thing, just making sure that they're okay. getting fed and bathed.
Thank you.
And
thank you for your work for the Chiss Imperial Navy. Now go change some diapers.
It, right.
Sheesh, man.
Yeah.
What a way to... Oh, and you're doing this, by the way, you're 14.
Right.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Some baby powder. I kind of noticed... I didn't clarify in the document... I meant Star Wars list, but it's interesting you put your favorite Star Wars characters.
And, oh yeah,
I did. And I think you put Thrawn, Dooku, and Padme.
I did.
I feel like that's a pretty good, you know, those are some very strong characters in their own right. In least favorite, you put Arinda Price and you put Brendel Hux, who were the Imperial and First Order protagonists. You know, respectfully, but you also put Ki-Adi-Mundi, the Jedi.
Yes.
Why?
This
did he not fend for the Wookiees?
This character causes me so much grief.
Yeah.
And it's literally just because I'm petty. It has nothing to do with his character.
Those are usually the best reasons.
It's just because of every time I talk about relationships within the Jedi and that sort of thing, I always get comments on my TikTok saying, well, what about Ki-Adi-Mundi and his 17 wives? And I'm like,
was it that many or is it just, I heard it was just two.
There is it's a Legends concept, and I think it was more than five, I think. And he had like a whole bunch of kids and stuff, and it was because his species wasn't like they couldn't have lots of kids or something like that. They were dying
I had heard that they were dying out or something like that. I think that was just a loophole that he made up.
And
he just passed a memo around. Oh, by the way, my species is dying.
Right.
Oh, okay.
They're like, all right. All right.
Okay. Well,
cool. Go have fun, I guess.
Yeah. No one can have relationships except for this guy.
Exactly.
You know, no marriages, Anakin.
Yeah.
This guy's cool. It's fine.
It's always the people that are just like, well, what about Ki-Adi-Mundi? And I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to have to explain again that this is a Legends concept. And it's, I'm not talking about Legends.
Yeah, it's tough, man. That Legends versus canon thing. But this is actually a good example of that, this character. And that's the reason why I wanted to talk about him. Because we it's more than just a synopsis of what we've seen him do. It's more like he's like Filoni and now Favreau. And everybody involved in the Lucasfilm writing, they are pulling examples of canon and repurposing them.
Yeah.
So the question now is, if we get a character like Thrawn and his story being tweaked, you know, it's not one-to-one, but if we're seeing an example of him being put into canon, who else could we see? So that's like sort of like the overarching question that I want to ask, you know, moving forward.
Yeah.
So why don't we dive in and we'll talk a little bit about Thrawn. So the first big question is, who is he?
He is a alien Grand Admiral for the Imperial Navy. I'm not entirely too sure if he is the only alien Grand Admiral in canon. I believe in Legends he was. A lot of the information about Thrawn comes from Legends, which kind of stinks a little bit. But with all the new books and stuff coming out, we're getting more canon information. But I don't believe we have a lot of information about Grand Admirals in general.
What we do know is that they've always been old and white.
Right. And then now you have some awesome ones like what's her name? Rae Sloan. She's tight. I believe she's a big character in the Phasma book. I think in Aftermath too. And then the A New Dawn one with the Hera and Kanan and stuff. She's awesome. But yeah, I mean, you have Thrawn and Rae Sloan, and I'm having a hard time thinking of anyone else.
Yeah, it's interesting that's only that sort of diversity. I mean, they're bad guys, but at least the bad guys are diverse,
right? And exactly,
they're more inclusive. It's like it's a progressive, you know, empire, you know. In the past few years, especially in the, I don't want to say secondary, but they're not the, if the primary storytelling is the movies, the secondary could be shows and books and graphic novels, that they are including that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was very interesting because, you know, in terms of what was canon for a very long time, it was the Empire was very old and white.
Yeah.
And, you know, and male, like rarely do you ever see some female officers.
Yeah.
Especially high ranking ones. So I thought it was very interesting that they're being more inclusive of the people you're supposed to hate.
Right.
So he has his species, the Chiss, they're found like in the outer rim, or not even the outer rim. It's
farther
like
farther than that.
That
they are in the unknown regions. It's an entire part of space called Chiss space. There are multiple planets here. There is Rentor, which is where Thrawn was born. He was born to a poor family who didn't really have a reputation or anything. But what ended up happening is that he was basically scouted out because he was a genius. And then he was put into the Chiss Academy, essentially, where he got adopted into a royal family. There are nine ruling families within the Chiss. So he ended up becoming a merit adoptive situation. And then there is Chila, which is the capital planet. That's where some of the ruling families live. I can't remember if it's all of them or if it's some of them. I don't have the greatest memory.
That's fine.
But I remember the important part.
Yeah.
But it's such a cool thing that Zahn was able to basically create this completely separate, gigantic part of the Star Wars universe, or the Star Wars galaxy, because it's technically in the galaxy, but not at the same time.
Yeah,
that makes
sense. So for reference, you're referring to Timothy Zahn, the author of the Thrawn books from back in the 80s.
90s.
In the 90s, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's very interesting how an author, I mean, I'm not sure if this is how it works exactly. There's some authors that I actually want to bring on the podcast and I want to pick their brain on this, but like how much autonomy do they have when it comes to, do they have the, I mean, if they're Star Wars fans, they already know what is and what isn't part of it, you know?
Yeah.
But then there could be like a rough outline of what to include, but then in terms of the details, they just sort of flesh out on their own. And I wonder if that's something that Zahn had, because if that was the case, then he wild it out.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, with Thrawn's character.
He did all sorts of stuff. So in his original books, I know that George Lucas had said, you know, these books, I don't really see them as canon. It's just an expanded universe. So it's not real. But I believe he did have contacts at Lucasfilm that basically guided him and let him know, you know, what was a thing, what wasn't a thing. Didn't really tell him what he couldn't do because it's, you know, it was technically like an alternate universe sort of a situation. But I think the cool thing about the new canon books that are coming out that he's also writing, he's writing all of the Thrawn books.
Oh, that's awesome.
He is referencing in especially the newer ones, the Ascendancy series that's not all of them are out yet. Just the first one is, he's referencing a book that he wrote. I can't remember if it's in the 90s or the early 2000s. It's called Outbound Flight. So he's referencing a particular event that happened within that book. And then that makes that canon. So it's like, how far are we going to go?
Yeah, but then there's that overarching argument as to what is and what isn't canon. And you can't you just sort of have to, man, it's such a weird period of time being a Star Wars fan today.
Yeah.
Because ever since of the legal acquisition of the Star Wars rights, now it's sort of like a grab bag versus if you were a fan, you know, maybe just before the prequels hit, mm-hmm. you had like almost 30 years, well, like 20 years of material in comic books and novelizations of building material. It's interesting that Timothy Zahn's being involved in the process again, because I can't remember her name right now, but there was an author who she wrote several books on the Mandalorians. And then as soon as Filoni introduced the idea that the Mandalorians were, for a period of time, were not warmongers, that they were actually trying to be a peaceful people, mm-hmm. That completely scrapped that chunk of legends history for the Mandalorians, and now they're completely starting from scratch, and she's not getting involved in any future novelization or storytelling regarding the Mandalorians. Yeah. So it's kind of like there's pros and cons to reintroducing these characters.
Right.
It comes down to a matter of whoever is the decision making, whatever, or whoever's doing the decision making, what they think is going to be, you know, canon or not anymore.
That's also kind of interesting, because I can't remember if I mentioned it anywhere in the document, but Timothy Zahn had no idea that Thrawn was going to be included in Rebels. He had literally no idea. He was invited to, I believe it was at like Star Wars Celebration or something like that, where
it was like, wow. Could you imagine finding out that your child, basically your brainchild is now somewhere else? It's like,
it was after,
and you find out at the watch party.
Basically. Yeah. They were like, here's the trailer for it. And he was like, and then, you know, the
Dave, we need to talk.
I feel like, with that said, there is a very large disconnect between the character and how he is written and how he is portrayed in like visual media. Mm-hmm. Very large disconnect, which sucks.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I mean, even in The Mandalorian, he had no idea that was going to happen. He found out on Facebook. Fans
which is officially the worst way to find anything out.
Fans were writing on his Facebook posts or whatever, like, "Oh man, can't wait to see Thrawn."
And he's like, "Neither can I." Like,
what are you talking about?
I guess me too.
He had no clue until everyone else knew.
How do we pronounce if we can, how do we pronounce Thrawn's real name?
All right, so the other day,
give me three tries.
the other day I was sitting in my bathroom and I'm like, Mithron Yorodo.
I can't remember if this was fan art or if this was an actual graphic novel where Anakin is trying to pronounce Thrawn's name.
Yes,
that. Which, by the way, there is a novelization where young Anakin during the Clone Wars and Thrawn, when he's part of the Chiss mm-hmm. Academy or Chiss Navy, they actually meet.
Yes, that is in Alliances. Yeah.
Right. So Anakin is trying to pronounce Thrawn's name and he keeps butchering it. And Thrawn is like, no, this is the way. And Anakin's like, yeah, that's what I said. No, it's this. And Anakin's like, yeah, I know. That's what I said. And at the end, Thrawn is like, okay, fine. Whatever.
Yeah, basically. That's pretty much exactly what happened in the book.
This
that is canon information.
That's the book, by the way. That's the whole book. It's two of them meeting for coffee and Anakin keeps butchering Thrawn's name.
Someone asked me on one of my friends, TikTok friends asked me they were like, you should get into cosplay and just like pretend to do like a Starbucks skit where you know, Thrawn's
name is
being called.
That would be amazing.
Something like something.
I mean,
weird.
You've got the cosplay. You've got your half down. Yeah. Now you only need is someone to duet you with like an Anakin cosplay. I think that'd be great.
Exactly. I almost just want to do it myself because I love it.
That'd
so
be pretty
much.
Cool. What can you tell us about him in terms of his personality?
So I get it depends on what version of his personality you're talking about.
Okay.
Because there are a couple. There's, you know, there's the book, the canon book personality, which is now granted the books are written in his perspective, so you get more of an insight into him and the way he thinks.
Because everything before in the 90s was written like in the third person.
Pretty much, yeah. He wasn't the main character of the Heir to the Empire trilogy. I believe it was between like Luke and Leia and some other guy.
Okay.
But yeah, he was just kind
probably of probably the Emperor, some other dude, whatever.
Some other dude.
Some other guy. I think his name was Palpatine.
Sheev?
Sheevy Palps.
Who names their kid Sheev? I don't know.
God, name was Sheev, man. Such a whack name. It's interesting. But, so everything's from his perspective now.
Yeah. So everything in the canon books are in his perspective. So he is he's a meticulous person. He's someone that likes to think things out. He's not a hateful person. There are many times in some of the books where he says that he regrets the loss of life. He's not out to kill anybody. He's just doing his job, basically, and what he thinks is right, but he's not going to torture people.
I feel like I got that vibe. We got that visually when he was in Rebels. Mm-hmm. The impression that we get from him is that he is hyper intelligent.
Yes.
And he is incredibly sound, tactfully speaking, but he's also an incredibly skilled fighter.
Yes.
And in the rare occasions where you see him kind of like, you know, seething, he always just takes a deep breath, takes a couple of steps back, and then he goes back into his like normal tone. Like, no, this is not the way. This is, you know, not how we do things.
Right.
He's very methodical.
Yes.
He's incredibly methodical. I feel like he's almost like he's like the Sherlock Holmes of Star Wars almost.
Yes.
Space Sherlock, yeah. I actually saw some fan art of Benedict Cumberbatch in, you know, as Thrawn. I'm like,
That is
like visually, I'm not for it. But in terms of the personality,
yes.
Like that version of Sherlock would be interesting.
Yes.
Let's talk about him in terms of his tactics, so to speak. Or rather, you have a note that although he's a tactical genius, he doesn't understand politics. What do you mean by that?
Right. So he, this was a pretty big point in the Chaos Rising novel, where he kind of came to terms with the fact that he doesn't understand politics. And this is because he can't anticipate politics. You can anticipate warships, but you can't anticipate when someone's just going to change their mind and, you know, maybe someone's not going to give you money to fund your whatever because they didn't like what color shoes you wore or something like that. It's hard to anticipate stuff like that. But with, you know, in a tactical sense, in a war sense, I believe his Chiss comrade and friend Arlani pointed out, you know, you can anticipate when a ship starts to move, you have a certain amount of time where you can react to that. But when you're talking about people and emotions and things like that,
that's random almost.
Whoop. Yeah. You can't.
It's almost like, not that I can have anything to say this definitively, but it's almost like he's kind of like a savant, like he has like a higher functioning autism.
Yeah.
Where some people just cannot gauge the emotions of people. And frankly, I don't blame them, because emotions can be random and weird and very unprecedented at times, but very hyper-focused and incredibly capable at doing very specific tasks.
Yeah.
And I got that impression from Thrawn, that he's incredibly focused, incredibly intelligent, and able to, and as we saw in Rebels, able to deduce everything you need to know about a person just based on the work of, based on their artwork, based on their culture.
Yep.
We saw that how he was heavily involved with Sabine's artwork, Hera, and the Twi'lek, at least her clan.
Right.
And he was able to figure out everything he needed to know about them as his enemies just by collecting.
Exactly.
And examining the artwork. And I thought that was like, you're telling me we got a gentleman villain? Like, we finally got, like, this is what I imagine.
Oh, don't forget about Dooku.
Oh, yeah.
The most gentlemanly of villains.
That's true. The way that they portrayed him, I mean, that elegant beard, though, like, you know, I'm not purporting I want to be a Sith, but they did know how to dress, you know, that Dooku had that drip, you know? So he... And I would also imagine this would be Governor Tarkin, you know, if Tarkin lasted more than the events of A New Hope, if we actually got to see him, his character fleshed out. I know that his character was fleshed out in some graphic novels, but I would imagine that he and Thrawn were contemporaries, like, you know, still kind of like rivals at the time, because we did see that when we saw Tarkin in Rebels, he was not a governor, was he?
I think he was. I think he was a Moff. Oh no,
he was definitely Grand Moff as well.
Yeah,
but he was not an admiral like Thrawn was. So technically,
no. Because he gave Arrynda her governorship. He was the one that granted her the governorship. I believe that was in the first Thrawn book.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, so he had some sort of power to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
and he was almost like a mediator in Thrawn treason. There was a
Tarkin.
Yeah, Tarkin was between Thrawn and Krennic. There was a dispute about the Project Stardust, the Death Star, and he almost acted like a mediator between Krennic and Thrawn with Palpatine, you know, also trying to figure out what they were going to do. So
each of them had their own I'm sorry to interrupt, each of them had their own projects. Interesting. You know how like Krennic, for instance, his project was Project Stardust, the Death Star, and then Tarkin, like, oh, yoink, this was my idea the whole time.
Right.
Such a power move on Tarkin's part. That's why I love Rogue One.
And then
Thrawn's pet project was the, what do they call it? The Tri-Defender or the something like that?
Tie Defender.
There's the Tie Defender. Which was essentially a Tri-Fighter. It was a Tri-Fighter.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
It was a, you know, three wings.
Had those three little things on it.
Yeah, the three-pronged Tie Defender as opposed to like what we saw before is the two-pronged. I still never understood the landing sequence of those things. Like, if you're gonna make them expensive, make the landing a little bit, make whatever. Anyway, but that also goes to the character, you know, to the personality of the character. Mm-hmm. Whereas Krennic was an architect, and I really liked his character. And you know, I don't know if you know this, but for Mike and I, our backgrounds are in architecture. So when I saw a character like Krennic, who was essentially a space station architect, I'm like, this is a bad guy I can get behind, you know? Yeah. But then Thrawn is a military leader.
Yeah.
So his response is going to be military in nature. Yeah. Very much like Moff Gideon, his project was the Dark Troopers. Again, he was a military leader, so his response was going to be military in nature. In this case, you know, super soldiers, cyber soldiers, whatever. So the the Tri-Fighter was his response. And then I guess it was Tarkin's job, or rather to act as a mediator to the Emperor, like, project works, this project won't work.
Yeah.
You know, you get this funding, things like that.
And you know, it kind of surprised me that he went with the Tie Defenders for a little while, because I can't remember if it was called like the Target Initiative or whatever, but it was the reasons that the TIE fighters don't have shields is because of Target and they wanted to cut costs. Mm-hmm. But they also found out
cheap.
That yeah, wow. he was a cheap dude. he looks like a cheap leather bag, but he
that's you know, no way to disrespect
he
the dead.
Made it so that you know they cut costs. Yeah. so he made the point not to put shields on them, and that was basically to scare the Imperial Navy and the TIE pilots into, well, you better pilot that thing real good or you're going to get blown up.
So let me get this straight, because at that point, if you don't, I mean, there were enlistments.
Yeah.
But when you get there, it's hard to like go to your CO and say, hey, can I get a transfer out of here, you know, to another base? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you either signed up or you were enslaved by the Imperial yeah. Army and tough.
Yeah. Sucks to suck.
Yep. That's the price, buddy. You're in it. Yeah. So.
And that it really shows to Thrawn's character, I think, especially that when he came out with the TIE Defenders, that he put shields on them and he put mm-hmm. more guns on them to protect the pilots and make them yeah. feel safe and make them feel like they were worth something and not dispensable. Because that's all Tarkin saw them as, is just expendable
wow, that's,
people.
That's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
Actually.
And Thrawn saw his people as his people. And I think that speaks to his character a lot. Everyone that he's ever worked with, you know, they looked up to him and they thought a lot of him. And there are a lot of people out there that say that, you know, people who were under Thrawn wouldn't necessarily die for the Empire. They're dying for Thrawn. They're dying to protect him and everything he stands for, because he's, you know, kind of the best thing they have, given the circumstances.
Yeah, very much unlike Vader, where it's you die because of Vader.
Right.
He yeah. will literally choke you out.
Don't choke on your aspirations.
Again, another reason why that's one of my favorite movies. As to wit, the only pun or one of the few puns in the entire Star Wars universe, and it had to come from Vader himself. I loved it.
It was a good one.
I loved it.
I think said something similar in the Clone Wars series. She said something about don't choke on something. I can't remember what it was, but it was like in response to something. I thought that was an interesting little thing.
A little tie-in.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little okay. tie-in there. we don't know. You wrote a note that we don't know how old Thrawn is.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of in Solo, where Luke goes to Chewbacca and he goes like, "You're 190? He's like, "Wow, you look great."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't know how old he is. I am hoping that we get some sort of answers. We still have two more books in the Ascendancy series to come out. Mm-hmm. The next one comes out in about a month. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. But we don't really know. Yeah. I would personally put him around 5 years older than Anakin. Just given the way that he carries himself, I mean
he's more mature.
Yeah, he's more mature than Anakin.
But then again, I think everyone is more mature than Anakin,
right? So there's so. That but I mean they're in the Chaos Rising book, it kind of goes from when he was adopted. I think he was adopted because he was a teenager. And I don't think he had finished like actual school yet. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't tell you what year it is or anything like
okay.
that.
So Anakin, for reference, Anakin and Thrawn are contemporaries. They're relatively,
yeah.
you estimate they're relatively close in age.
Yeah.
If at the end of the events of Return of the Jedi, mm-hmm. when Vader dies, he is in his late 40s.
Yeah,
I think
so.
It is.
Yeah.
And if in the events of the end of Rebels, what happens just a few years before A New Hope, mm-hmm. He's blasted off into space, you know, via Purgle farts.
Right.
We don't know. He's still relatively young. So he's probably like in his late 20s, maybe early 30s.
Yeah.
Or am I getting this right?
Because he was one of the youngest, or if not the youngest, commander of the Ascendancy. Mm-hmm. They made it a point to say that he was very young to be in that position.
Okay.
So that kind of makes me think that he's in his 20s around the Clone Wars time.
Right.
In like Attack of the Clones era, Anakin kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, I guess it would be, it's after the Jedi Braid.
Yeah, Rebels takes place, I think, like at most a handful of years before A New Hope.
Yeah, and when him and Thrawn meet, he's a commander, he's young. For the first time, when Anakin and Thrawn meet on Batuu.
Right. What?
Yes. So really? Yes. That was another reason that was very exciting to be a Galaxy's End.
Interesting.
The majority of Thrawn Alliances that was written in like young Thrawn and young Anakin's perspective, mm-hmm, was on Batuu.
So I'm sorry, does this take place in the Timothy Zahn books in Legends or in canon?
In canon.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like right after the parks opened or something like that, and he was so excited to write about the park.
Yeah, I would.
It's like, nice.
I would.
So I guess he went there and he just kind of, you know, picked up landmarks and things like that. And
I wonder if there is now in canon and in written form, or at the least, you know, in his head, if there's a specific spot in Black Spire Outpost where Anakin and Thrawn actually met.
I think that Black Spire Outpost was mentioned in the book, and I think that it was the like little food shop.
Hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like
Ronto's Roasters?
I think so. I think that's okay. Like four shops or something like that inside that little
area. Okay.
Yeah. But then there's like the food one that was closed when we went there.
Man, that would kind of make sense. And it would, because when you go into Ronto's Roasters, if you haven't been to Galaxy's Edge, there is the place where you can basically get Kentucky Fried Ronto. And it's like some meat product in a bun. But they have a repurposed pod racer engine hanging from the roof, pointing down, engine, you know, exhaust downward, and mystery meat, which is the roast of whatever it's implied, is being turned on a spit by one of those like smelting robots, and he's just, you know, forever just turning the crank. And I just have this image now of Anakin reminiscing over his pod racing days.
Yeah.
Looking at all this strewn engines and parts all over, you know, the Black Spire Outpost, and Thrawn studying him, making these observations.
There,
because if I'm not mistaken, he figures out, but he doesn't say it, that Anakin is Vader.
Yeah. Yes, that was a big part of Thrawn Alliances, that he figured it out because of the way that he was flying his ship.
Interesting.
It was a particular maneuver that he had seen from Anakin. I feel like it had something to do with pod racing. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Spinning is a good trick.
I think it was something about spinning. But he was like, I've seen this before. I've seen this technique before. And I think that's what it was. Hmm. I think it was because
that's very interesting.
Sort of flying technique.
Now this gives me a new appreciation and some more headcanon next time I go visit Batuu.
You know,
that's very interesting.
Super awesome, though. One of the cast members when I was there, I had my Thrawn bounding on and all sorts of stuff. I had my Imperial plaque on. And one of the cast members came up to me and he was like, Grand Admiral Thrawn, it's great to have you back. And I was like, back? You have to have read the novel. Or you're just saying that because you weren't here.
I've heard that a lot of the cast members, not everyone, but at least when they opened up Galaxy's Edge, the original stock of cast members were heavily interviewed, and they need to make sure that they really were Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
I could tell.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. The immersion was great. I think about that a lot.
So while we reminisce about our days of visiting Galaxy's Edge and Batuu and Black Spire Outpost, why don't we take a minute and we'll take a break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
This episode of Death Watch is also brought to you by Skull Square Design Company. We're also huge fans of The Mandalorian, as well as Star Wars in general. And we wanted to share that love by making gifts for our fellow fans of Mando and the Child. Whether you wanted some flair while enjoying your favorite beverage in Oga's Cantina, or wanted to covertly show your support to the Resistance while exploring Batuu, we've got gifts for everybody. And not just Star Wars fans, but Marvel and Disney fans too. Check us out at skullsquared.com or follow us on social media at skullsquared. That's skull with a C, as in,
see y'all real soon.
And we're back. So, there's a question I've been wanting to ask you. We talked about how Thrawn sort of, he can determine who his opponents are, his weaknesses, how better to best them, just by looking at aspects of their culture, looking at their art and their history. And humans in our timeline, we have a tremendous amount of history and culture that he could potentially pick and choose from. So if he was able to pick a fight, you know, a formidable opponent from any artist in history, who would it be and why?
So it would have to be Picasso.
Okay.
It just kind of seems so funny to think about it, like him just like, what are these weird shapes that vaguely resemble a horse or whatever? Mm-hmm. Why did he choose a square? You know, like, it's just like weird color choices and just the style is very interesting.
But then I remembered
that Guernica was a thing. I'm not a art person. I'm not an art person, so I had to do my research on this one. Guernica, or I think that's how you say it, I'm not entirely too sure, but it was basically a anti-war political art piece that was created as a response of the Spanish Civil War. And it kind of went around to raise money, it toured countries and stuff like that to raise money for the building of, you know, Spain back. But he would have to have, like, if he was going to pick that apart, because it's an anti-war thing, you know, would he understand that? Would he understand why people don't want to go to war? Because that's kind of the way that he thinks in general. I think that it's very black and white with him, that, you know, why wouldn't you want to go to war to protect your country and blah 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't think about it from a citizen's perspective. I think even in the book he doesn't really see anyone except for the Chiss species as being, you know, quote unquote human or worth anything. So that
it's the Chiss way or the highway.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like that's an interesting, that's formidable. And then there's also pictures of Picasso where he's got like the cowboy hat and like he's always, right. I think I read a story somewhere that he would go to dinner parties and he would have like a dummy pistol with him. And he would just whip it out and just like pop, 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 pop. There has to have been at least one story somewhere where Picasso showed up with like a real revolver and it was like, Pablo, put that away.
Oh,
and they weren't blanks and they didn't even know about it. He was that crazy.
God. There was one guy I was reading about. I can't remember what his name is now. He's a famous painter, but everyone thought he was crazy or something. And he would show up in like weird outfits and like,
you're kind of describing almost every modern painter,
right? Like, just, you know,
I've got two. I mean, Thrawn, we've seen him as a physical combatant you know, but in a lot of these artists, I don't see them being able to go toe to toe with him for more than like 5-10 minutes. But then I can imagine him hearing, like, I've got this image of him walking down the hallways of the Louvre, the hallowed, you know, corridors, and he's looking at these artwork and he goes like, I could take him on. I could totally take her on. And then he's like, who's this guy? Who's this Wing for? Who's this Van Gogh character? 10 minutes tops. Wait, he did what with his ear? Okay. 15 minutes. Got it. And then you'll hear about like Salvador Dali, who is a very, this man walked into dinner parties with an armadillo on a leash. Like, you don't want to touch this man.
That's who I was thinking
of. You didn't know what he was carrying. I took a tour of the Louvre several years ago, and there is this one artist, and very, very similar to the idea of Guernica, where it was very anti-war. Mm-hmm. This particular painting was very anti-royalty, anti-establishment in a way. And when we did this tour, we were told that this painting had the blood of a royal mixed into it. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. In history, artists used to buy, whether they knew it or not, something called mummy brown, which is a particular pigment. And the way that they got that brown was it was ground up bits of literal mummies. And as we know, the Egyptian pharaohs and their families used to have their organs and certain remains preserved elsewhere outside of the actual sarcophagus. So what was popular at the time was acquiring somehow these organs, grinding them up, because they were basically dried blood. They had more brown, like a dark ochre kind of pigment to them.
Yep.
Fast forward to 1800s, during the French aristocracy, Louis XIV and his lineage. At the time, it was popular for them to do the same thing. When royals died and their families, family members, they would have their organs removed and preserved elsewhere. Well, that was happening for a while, except this also happened to coincide with the French Revolution. So normally their remains would have been preserved in... I can't remember it right now, but they were put in a particular church. Mm-hmm. Well, the revolts came. Those organs were taken, as with everything else. And people came into possession of the literal organs of dead royals. So one particular artist named Martin Drolling, he was able to acquire some. He ground up the heart of the Sun King himself, Louis XIV. And he developed this ochre brown mummy pigment of his own. And one of his paintings, which is hanging in the Louvre today, is interior of a kitchen. And I couldn't help but see that this is, if you look up this painting and you see the picture, it is a very droll, ironic, his name is Martin Drolling, but it's a very droll, very humble interior scene where the only source of light is coming from a window on the far end of the scene. And it's just peasants with their pots and pans and brooms, and looks dusty. And how perfect, in terms of the irony of all ironies, was a painting depicting a very humble scene of like French peasants, where the physical paint that they used was the literal blood of a royal. Ooh. Like, how metal is that? That is
quite metal.
And I can imagine that someone like Thrawn looking at this and going, he takes a second to like, yeah, no, I totally get it. I don't even want to fight this guy. I want him to paint more of this. Let's get some more of this mummy brown. See what he can do.
Oh man, I knew about mummy brown, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that part.
It's not even like a big painting. It's no bigger than a computer monitor. It's just, you know, almost as big as the Mona Lisa, which if you haven't seen it in person is tiny and super overrated. And that's just my personal opinion. Anyway, so yeah, just wanted to put that, you know, put the little cultural note in here.
Awesome. My mouth let's talk was about, like, hanging open the whole time. I know people can't see my reaction, but I'm like, like,
yeah, it is. It was a weird. It was a weird, and there was more than one painting that he had. To my knowledge, that's the only one that's in the Louvre. But he was fairly popular at the time. And can you imagine? Like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, this has parts of Louis XIV in there. You know,
that's
because there.
See,
it was a weird man. 1800s were a weird period of time.
Yeah,
in human history. Just gloss over that. So I kind of wanted to do this thing moving forward with talking about canon. Mm-hmm. And pose this question, you know, what could go wrong? And the idea is that as fans, we see what's going on. Without being too overtly critical, I think it's okay to have a certain healthy sense of being critical.
Right.
When questioning certain storytelling elements. Because this is a fandom, it's a storyline that we like, and we want, you know, we want to see what's best, or we want the best for it, rather. So my question is, with the character of Thrawn, especially now that he's been reintroduced in The Mandalorian, mm-hmm. what could go wrong in terms of how this would affect the timeline?
So I have a little bit of a theory that we are going to get some sort of version of Heir to the Empire. I mean, granted, we're not going to see Mara Jade. I really do not think that Mara Jade Skywalker's
gonna she's buried. she's buried, man.
I know that people want it so bad. They were like, oh my God, you know, Thrawn's coming. Mara Jade's going to come too. And it's like, no.
Because they interacted with each other. You mentioned that, like, the perspective of Luke and Leia. So at that time, Luke was married to Mara Jade in Legends. Mm-hmm. So Mara Jade also had interactions with Thrawn.
Yes. Okay. I believe Zahn was the one that created her character.
Really?
As well, I think. I can't remember if she was also created for this series or not. But, you know, fact check yourself at home. don't listen to me. But as far as the timeline goes, I mean, I believe the beginning part of the Heir to the Empire, it's been a very long time since I read it, was basically this one all-powerful Jedi who was, you know, Thrawn's nemesis, Jordash? No, that's some other guy.
Jordash?
It sounds like
DoorDash.
I know.
Jordans. Air Jordans.
Can't remember his name to save my life. He's like an old guy, and I remember looking at the Heir to the Empire book for the first time, and it was very like A New Hope, where it's like the shirtless, but it's not like shirtless Luke. It's like shirtless old man, like Merlin, like like holding something, and I'm like, what is this? I don't understand this. Yeah. But apparently
that was a dark time in Timothy Zahn's creative writing process.
that was something else. but I don't think he's gonna exist either, because there's no record of this man existing.
Yeah.
And
he was just credited as shirtless old man.
Shirtless old man. And he's a big part of it. But you have Thrawn, who has decided to pick up the remnants of the Empire after the events of Return of the Jedi, because these books were created as like a sequel trilogy.
Okay.
This is what people are talking about when they say that this is the sequel trilogy that they wanted versus, you know, the one that we got, which both are fine. Mm-hmm. Both are great. But this was something that was a little bit closer in timeline. But as far as, you know, how much is it going to change the timeline? Probably, you know, not really anything substantial. I think that they are going to have Thrawn pick up the remnants of the Empire and then, you know, sort of do his thing. I think that we're going to see him die. I don't I don't want to, but I think that we are going to see him die.
Yeah, but all the great villains got to die eventually.
Eventually. I don't think he's going to die of old age.
Come back as a Strandcast or a clone or
right.
hologram or I don't know. I'm so confused now. What about this character that we were introduced to in The Mandalorian? Morgan Elsbeth.
Morgan Elsbeth. There's a theory floating around that she might possibly be Night Sister. And I'm not entirely too sure how that would work.
What?
Yeah. So apparently the hair and makeup person was doing her character, and she posted on Instagram, you know, Morgan Elsbeth, survivor of or last Night Sister from Dathomir or something like that, in the caption after she posted it. And that the post no longer exists, probably because they told her to take it down.
Probably because it was, I mean, for a lot of reasons, it was a good idea to take it down immediately, but I also just, I'm not seeing it.
Right.
I'm not seeing it at all.
I have mixed feelings about it. I feel like if that is a thing that actually happened, there are like screen grabs of it and stuff like that. You know, maybe they told her, you know, this is what she should look like, you know, something like this. And maybe she was like, oh, it is.
I wonder, have you played Jedi Fallen Order?
Yes.
Okay. So I wonder if that may have been because you don't know when the creative processes for each of these two franchises begin and where they end, but they do overlap. And it could have been. Maybe she was supposed to be the last of the Night Sisters, but then Maren, I think was her name.
Maren, yeah.
In Jedi Fallen Order, she is the last of the Night Sisters. So maybe there was a last minute change where now Morgan Elsbeth is no longer a Night Sister, but some Imperial loyalist of some kind, or at least her family was. And then Maren would be the last of it because they, you know, there's talks of a sequel for Fallen Order. So that we don't know where her story is going
to
go.
That was the thing too. When Ahsoka was talking to Din about it, she was like, "You know, this is Morgan Elsbeth. She lost everything in the Clone Wars, and so she decided to join the Imperial Navy to, you know, help build a system that, you know, to destroy whatever." Yeah. So. She was definitely in the Imperial Navy, so I don't understand how that would work if she was a Night Sister. But
yeah, I'm not buying it. No, you can't shoehorn certain ideas just because we want to see a particular thing. Yeah. Versus where Fallen Order is already sort of addressing that thing. Yeah. You know, there's a whole Night Sisters time, you know, arc in that game. So I think just, you know, leave it alone.
I will say I'm a little confused by her. It's like a tattoo or something on her hairline. Right. I thought it was jewelry, but apparently I zoomed in. It looks like a tattoo. So
could be a family mark or a clan mark of some kind.
Yeah.
My interpretation of that episode was that her family or whatever her clan were involved in the building of Imperial ships. That's why she has money. That's why. And I found that's probably like my favorite episode of The Mandalorian was because it covered so many different things, including classicism or not. You know, class distinctions, poor versus ultra wealthy.
Yeah.
And of course her part of the compound is vibrant and beautiful and green. And everything else is dirty and dusty and, you know, decrepit. So I think she's a loyalist. We know that she's a loyalist. Right. She's helping to pick up the pieces. What all the Easter eggs that we saw after the fact was the insignia to Thrawn.
Yeah.
And his fleet on the droids. And I think there was there was something else. And then, of course, the big name drop at the end of the episode by Ahsoka.
So I have a theory that that Morgan Elsbeth had a connection to, God, I always forget his name. I had to write it down. Pelion. Gilad Pelion, who was Thrawn's right-hand man in the Legends trilogy. He was, you know, his confidant, his favorite boy.
Okay.
He was the captain of the Chimera. Before Thrawn even got to it. So he ended up becoming sort of like an apprentice to Thrawn, sort of a thing, or I guess you would call it a protege.
Okay.
The same way he did with Eli Vanto. But for Morgan Elsbeth, Gilad Pelion had been brought into canon in Rebels. I can't remember exactly what the situation was, but I believe it was in season 4 at some point, and Thrawn said, get Pelion, or get Captain Pelion, or something like that. And you hear him over like a comm or something like that. So wherever he is, he's obviously not on the Chimera, because that's where Thrawn is. He's somewhere, and they know each other. So I think that this is setting up possibly for Morgan and Pelion to go find Thrawn, and that's how Thrawn and Pelion end up together.
So you're saying that Morgan Elsbeth doesn't know where Thrawn is.
I think she found him. I think she and Pelion went to go find him.
Okay.
Because it seemed like, I think it's like around where he disappears is when he talks about Pelion. He's like, you know, get Pelion on whatever. And things were falling apart or something like that. I think that Morgan Elsbeth worked with or worked under Pelion. And when Thrawn went missing, you know, Pelion knows who Thrawn is, so he went looking for him with Elsbeth. You know, I think that Elsbeth might be somebody that Pelion holds in high regard. And that's how she ended up with the droids. And, and you know, maybe because she saved him or something like that, he, you know, here's something to protect you. You can take these droids that are on the Chimera.
Okay.
Because they had to have come from somewhere, and he's not just, you know, hanging out. He's not toting droids everywhere. So I think that she found.
What is he, Moff Gideon? Jeez, man. You just can't have droids to spare.
I can't remember how many she had. I think it was 2 or 3, right?
But, yeah, there was only like a couple.
Yeah.
Which would make sense, because if were in a small little backwater, you know, little fort, encampment, whatever, you don't really need an entire squad of assassin droids when you already have literal manpower.
Right.
Plus RoboCop.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're good.
I think that, you know, if you read the novels, you kind of get the sense that Thrawn is not loyal to the Empire. So I feel like if I hadn't watched Rebels, or if that didn't exist, and then we heard this name drop in The Mandalorian, I still am kind of confused, but it is a little confusing, because you see that his loyalty ultimately lies with the Chiss Ascendancy and not with the Empire. And when Palpatine, you know, dies, you know, why would he hang around? Just go back home.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, once you're found, just go back home. So there has to be some reason why he stuck around. And I really want to know what that reason is.
Yeah.
Maybe because he felt like he owed whoever saved him, and he stuck around to help them or something like that. But his ultimate loyalty lies with the Chiss, unless something happened to them that we don't know about, which would be devastating, and I would hate it.
The Empire does have a reputation of burning over people that have helped them in the past. So it is entirely possible. Or maybe it's just hard to go home, so he sticks around.
Yeah.
Tactically speaking, or logistically speaking, rather, it makes sense to stick around where you're at and then try to earn money and selling to whatever's left, whether the highest bidder being Imperial or Mercs or whatever the beginnings of the First Order, which is also something that I feel like Mandalorian is like hinting, just little tiny Easter eggs. But they're hinting towards the beginnings of the First Order.
Yeah.
So maybe he's helping build them up.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where the business model is. So now he's like independent. Now that he has all this, he's a tactical genius. He has experience. He has the reputation. He has the resources. You know, you might as well. He's not doing it for greed, but he's like, my brain is worth something. Let me do something with it.
Yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's just very interesting. And I'm very, very, very curious to see how they work it out. It just kind of popped into my head though, but what, you know, another possibility for him not going back is because in order to get to unknown in the unknown regions, you have to have a navigator.
Oh, kind of like a person, yeah, like a Skywalker in, yeah, this case, case, like we saw, in Rise of Skywalker, he had to have that Sith holocron Kylo, mm-hmm, Ren so that he can navigate to Exegol.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, and he had Vader do it for him in Alliances. He, in order to get out of a sticky situation, he had to have Vader navigate the ship for him because he couldn't do it. So in order for him to go home, he would have to have some sort of force sensitive, somebody who could use precognition. It really couldn't be anybody. So there might be a possibility that Ezra helps him out, takes him home.
Wow.
Maybe.
I didn't even think about that. That was going to be my follow-up question. So if you haven't seen it yet, at the very end of Rebels is this moment where Ezra boards a Chimera, and the Purrgil, he's able to communicate with the Purrgil, and the Purrgil fulfill the prophecy of the Bendu, which is he'll have arms wrapped around his neck or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And he, once Thrawn is incapacitated to a degree, Ezra is able to convince the Purrgil to jump to hyperspace and blast off. And there's that quiet moment where everybody's looking up and like,
yeah,
what just happened?
Yeah.
So it is yet to be explained what happens to Ezra. Mm-hmm. For a period of time, Ezra and Thrawn will be in the same place in the same period of time.
Yes.
We know what happens to Hera to a degree later on. Mm-hmm. We now know what happens to Ahsoka. We, mm-hmm, don't know where Sabine is.
Right.
It's inferred at the epilogue. Oh, man, this is a conversation.
Yeah,
there's a conversation we had with Mike. I can't remember if it's epilogue or prologue.
Epilogue's so at the end.
Epilogue's at the end, right?
Yes, okay. Yeah.
his argument was epi, like an EpiPen. You take it at the end.
Honestly,
when you have a,
I almost said eulogy. So
yeah,
I know it's not eulogy,
but it's sort of. So we know that at some unknown. Let's hope it's not a eulogy. So we know that at some unknown time has passed, Sabine is older.
Yes.
Ahsoka is also older. We don't know if they meet up again. It's inferred that they meet up so they can go find Ezra because, mm-hmm, Sabine has to fulfill a promise. And we think that's to find him. But we don't know if this takes place after the events of The Mandalorian or before. It's
right.
It's not confirmed. So does Sabine come together with Ahsoka to go find Ezra? Is that the reason why Ahsoka is so fixated on trying to find Thrawn? Does Hera meet up? Where's Chopper? Is he still committing more murders?
Probably.
You know, these are the questions that we have that we would very much like to know.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is still years out until we find these answers.
Yeah.
But they're very interesting questions to ask,
yeah,
because I feel like they will have a resolution eventually. Like, you heard the rumors now that we might see Hera, mm-hmm, in Rangers of the New Republic.
I am all for that. That would be so totally cool.
That'd be so cool. I mean, she does have. It's not on screen, kind of like what they did with Ahsoka. I'm drawing a blank on how do they call that. Live action.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a live action version of Hera, but we did see a more realistic version of Hera in the Star Wars Squadrons game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they did a great job.
Yeah.
So all they need to do is get the actress that they, yeah, did the mocap for her,
yeah,
and just do that. And then they're like, I'd be great with that.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's a possibility we could see her in Andor. I was thinking about that too, because in Rogue One, you know, we hear her on the comm, and we also see Chopper somewhere. I didn't know that Chopper was in Rogue One until like a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't know that either. He was there for like a split second,
but he was there.
For me, it doesn't count. I don't know. It's like R2. It's like saying R2-D2 and C-3PO were in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, no, they were there on a wall. Like, that was hieroglyph doesn't count, man.
But I mean, that total possibility we could see him in Andor if we don't get her
I absolutely need to see a live action Chopper. I mean, there's proof that there's physical BB-8s.
Yeah,
they had someone build a real.
The TikTok guy with the chopper that he built,
and that's my goal. Goal is to build that. I mean, he 3D prints everything, so
and he like makes it shake.
He gets like the hands come out.
I love it.
I need that. I need some real life war criminal robots in my life.
Absolutely.
There's almost not confirmed, but heavy rumors, which if it's kind of like what happened with Rosario Dawson, where it's just everybody clamoring, and then someone in the writer's room were like, yeah, you know what, actually Rosario Dawson would be a good fit for Ahsoka, and then they made it happen.
Yeah,
I feel like this is a great example of that actually happening.
Yeah.
You know, nothing against Cara Dune as a character, but it's unlikely we're going to see Cara Dune again.
Yeah.
So having someone like Hera being on the forefront as a strong female lead, and Hera specifically, you know, everybody's favorite space mom, that'd be a great addition to the Rangers series.
I think that would be, I mean, I'm really trying to think of a maternal character who was also very in her own power and kind of served as, you know, not like a role model, but someone that other people could see themselves in.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the definition of a role model. But, you know, semantics. You know.
That is true.
I mean, it's no big deal. It's just literal definition.
Okay. It's just the literal definition. It's fine. But I mean, I like, you have Shmi, but like, shouldn't really do anything.
She didn't do anything. She didn't even give a good reason. Oh, he was just born one day.
She was just kind of there. Okay. I mean, it would be so awesome to see like a mother character.
A more maternal character, yeah.
Being a super cool pilot lady that kicks butt. Like, I would love it.
The argument, some may argue, well, what about Leia? The problem is there was a big disconnect between when Leia was in her prime. Yeah. During the rebellion, and then when Leia is in the resistance as a general, we didn't see them raising Ben.
We didn't really
if see anything her it's sort of as... the consequences of the way that they raised him,
right? Yeah, we didn't see her with her child at all. I mean, you kind of got some of that from some of the books and stuff, but it wasn't really anything groundbreaking or anything. But I would love it so much to see her.
Yeah, I would too. And I just want to see more Chopper. And then there's also the Ahsoka series. If you can't tell, he's one of my favorite droids. There's also the Ahsoka series.
It's him or Triple Droid Zero that are my favorite.
Who?
Triple Zero. He is. Who's that? So he was made for the Dr. Aphra comics.
The protocol, like the murder protocol droid.
Yes,
he's like C-3PO but all black.
Yes, and he like talks about draining blood all the time. Like constantly. Yeah,
that sounds on par with someone who's a Sith enthusiast. I actually have a Dr. Aphra episode planned a few months from now. Nice. So we'll talk about Triple Zero. There's also the Ahsoka series coming up, and now that Ahsoka is getting at least one season of live action Ahsoka, I'm excited to see live action Sabine, because we are definitely Sabine stans in this household. So seeing her, how does that play up with the end of Rebels? Is that a true epilogue? Where is that going to fit in the timeline compared with Thrawn? Like, we need a flowchart,
right? I had been thinking about that, because I think I finished it took me a while to finish all of Rebels, but I can't remember if it was before or after. I don't even remember seeing this epilogue scene. I don't remember it to save my life. I genuinely, like, it's just not popping up. I can see it because she's in the white robes, but like,
right.
I don't remember actually watching it.
It wasn't much. It was, Lothal, very, what was it called? The one place in the Neverending Story where it's like the white, Pearl Tower or something
Crystal
like that.
Anyway. Castle.
Crystal, not the Dark Crystal. That's another Lucas. That's another Jim Henson franchise.
That's right.
Great movie. And if you haven't seen it, the series was actually pretty cool too.
But, terrifying.
I know. That's what made it great. It was absolutely terrifying. Mark Hamill actually did the voice of one of the vulture villains, the Skeksis.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mark Hamill spent more time portraying villains than he has actual heroes. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Love that guy.
Oh God, I've gone off track. I'm sorry. Anyway, so the epilogue is Lothal is free of Imperial rule. It's very pristine. It's very white and beautiful. It's meant to appear that it's back in where it should have been, you know, pre-Empire. Sabine is on the same tower that Ezra sort of grew up in when you first see him in the first episode. And she's got her, you know, pixie cut, but she's still got her Mandalorian multicolored outfit. And then she meets up with, there's some weird ship, like a big sail ship comes in, and that's Ahsoka's ride. And she comes in very, you know, Gandalf the Grey with her staff and hood. They don't say anything. It's just narration on Sabine's part saying, I got to fulfill a promise. And I think it's inferred that she's got to go to find Ezra. So again, no one really can confirm where in the timeline that's happening. And I just.
If they ended up splitting off, you know, like that. And that's why we don't see
like divide and conquer
Ahsoka.
Possible.
Like, you know, Ahsoka's going to go find Thrawn and, you know, presumably Ezra and Thrawn are no longer in the same area because he's been mentoring this other.
It would kind of make sense. There would be no reason why Ahsoka and Sabine would both be in the same sort of encampment trying to get information from Elsbeth when Ahsoka's capable of doing that on her own and Sabine can go and find info elsewhere and then just regroup after the fact.
That is interesting. I wonder if she like immediately finds him with Thrawn or you know, he goes off and does something else. I don't know.
I don't know how he gets away. Yeah. And speaking of Sabine, how does this play in with the events of The Mandalorian when Bo-Katan is trying to restore Mandalore?
Right.
Maybe this might actually test her loyalties. Is she loyal to her friend or to her people?
Yeah. That's because it was Sabine that gave her
initially the Darksaber, right?
And that was a very interesting thing in The Mandalorian. I couldn't really understand that.
Yeah, no one does.
Why not she even, was upset about
not,
it, but
not even the Mandalorian. He doesn't understand what's going on. And that's what I love about his character. Like, okay, here you go. No, I yield. Oh, no, but that's not how it works.
I'm sitting there like, but didn't you just think it?
Nobody's going to know.
Nobody's
going to know. They're going to know.
Nobody's going to know.
Oh, my God.
But it's, I genuinely did not understand that at all. But, yeah. I mean, she has to know, well, she does know who Sabine is. Would she know where she is? And why wouldn't Sabine be with her?
Yeah.
You know,
it's possible. It is possible that she knows because she knows where Ahsoka is and Ahsoka's in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
So if she had that kind of information, they probably have, you know, they did connect earlier just before Din Djarin, meets up with Bo-Katan.
We're probably going to get some more Bo-Katan action in the
Ahsoka I'm okay with that. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of which, hold on, give me a second. I'm all for my
nice.
Yeah, thank you.
That's awesome.
I'm Thank you. I'd be okay with calling Bo-Katan a new Disney princess.
Yeah. She's tired.
So anyway, I got one last question for you.
Yeah.
What are your, if we ever see Thrawn in live action, what would your expectations be?
Two words. Cheek bones.
You can't. I don't see it That's happening it. Any other way. I don't see it happening any other way. What about the actor who actually voiced, I can't remember his name, but who actually voiced Thrawn?
Lars Mikkelsen, yeah.
Lars Mikkelsen.
There are a lot of people who genuinely would not accept anybody else. Like, they just wouldn't
What's your take on that?
I mean, as long as they pick somebody who can embody the character, it's the voice that's really the main part of it that you really have to get, because it can't just be another British accent, because that's not where he's from. It's going to have to be.
It's harrowing almost. Whenever you heard Thrawn speak, it commanded a presence.
Yeah.
Like with Ahsoka, I understood the decision to have Rosario Dawson. Mm-hmm. As opposed to Ashley Eckstein, because Ashley Eckstein, with much respect to her, she's always going to sound like a little kid.
Right.
And in this timeline, Ahsoka's an adult.
Right.
And the way that she was always portrayed in Clone Wars or Rebels, she was, I don't want to say childish, because she, at least, well, she wasn't the beginning, but she grew up.
Right.
She had these experiences, but she did sound somewhat childlike.
Yeah.
Versus now she's an adult.
And I mean, that's just kind of translation for voice acting in general. When you're voice acting a cartoon, you're going to make it sound like a cartoon.
And yeah.
It's, you know, like it's more exaggerated than it normally would be. And I don't know how she would translate that back into like a live action setting sort of a thing. But I mean, I think that they picked well. I think that Rosario Dawson was a good pick. You know, I appreciate their decision. I totally understand why, you know, Ashley Eckstein wasn't picked for it. You know, but
with someone like Lars, though, he's a very thin frame.
Yes.
You know, about the same height. There's a lot you can do with hair and makeup. I feel like that would be a good choice, where the voice actor is the actor for this character.
I think that a lot of people, when they talk about that they don't like this choice, or that they don't want Lars to do it, they want, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch to do it instead. My point of, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense age-wise, because Thrawn, we're getting old man Thrawn. We're not getting, you know, hip, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe Thrawn as hip.
Thrawn.
He's not some, hello, fellow citizens. Do you wish to join me in an imbibement in the local beverage establishment?
You know, he probably.
You mean the bar?
He totally.
No, thanks, buddy. Good.
But I mean, yeah, like it's I feel like Lars's age is perfect. I think that his facial structure is perfect. I think that you know, his voice is his voice.
Yeah. You know? I wonder if to a degree, well, in the original Timothy Zahn books, on the covers, they had a depiction of Thrawn, but it was more like a general, you know, general look of what the Chiss would look like. And I feel like for the animated version, they'll do this in cartoons. They'll actually model the character after the voice actor. And I wonder if they did that with Thrawn. I mean, I can't prove it.
It definitely seems that way, because there's. So in there was a comic book companion to Heir to the Empire, as well as the new canon Thrawn novel. So if you compare the two, you have Thrawn, who has a more, let's say, natural head shape, more like a human sort of a thing. And then you have Legends Thrawn, who literally looks like an Easter Island head. Like, just looks like a box.
Okay.
Like, so if... Oof. I mean,
they,
I don't know how
they did our boy dirty.
They did him dirty.
They massacred my boy.
Old Man Thrawn was a choice. His visual was a choice. But that's what...
A decision was made, and it was a very... Not a great one, but okay.
No, wasn't a good one. So, you know, with... I could totally see that, because they definitely changed the way he looked. Absolutely. And I think he was very...
Definitely need to, sorry, I need to take this down. Sorry.
Yeah.
Cheekbones definitely need to be the thing. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like... in the way that he spoke was very...
Yeah.
There's something unnerving about when someone is constantly just... It's not monotone, but it is very low and kind of whispery.
Yeah.
And everything that he said was very succinct. Mm-hmm. And almost to the point.
Yes.
There's nothing, something very unnerving about that.
Nothing, you know, wavered him ever. He would just, you know, you could be yelling at him. He'll be in the middle of the sentence and he'll stay the same.
The same, yeah.
Same tone. It's terrifying.
on a final note, how are you feeling about the future of this character, Thrawn?
I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous.
it's your boy. It's like you've come to love this character.
This is definitely the first character in Star Wars in general that I have really delved into and cared so much about. So you would say I'm a little protective of my boy. But
you actually have one right behind you, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
I can't see it because the camera's kind of cut off.
My little Thrawn from Galaxy's Edge. Cool. But yeah. I feel like because of the new novels that have come out, I am much more hopeful because Zahn just kind of was like, here's as much content as possible. You know, here's six canon books that you can pull from that describe his personality. And I hope we do get something a little bit different than what we see in Rebels, because he is a little bit more evil, I guess you would say, in Rebels.
Than he actually is, or rather than the way that he was portrayed visually.
Yeah, yeah. In the novels, he's a little bit more, I wouldn't say passive, but, you know, he's... like the guy with the speeder bike, he blows him up. He makes him he makes him kill himself, basically. That seemed very out of character for me. I don't think Thrawn would do something like that. Especially not to factory workers, the people that can't help that they're there.
That's something you mentioned. I didn't know that about Thrawn's upbringing, but he has a very, well, not riches, but he has a very rags to riches kind of story.
Yeah.
Where he knows what it's like to grow up in a humble environment.
Yeah. Yes.
So if anything, he's a protagonist. He's kind of like, he's almost like Thanos in a sense, where lately there's this string of villains that are no longer two dimensional, but you're like, you know what? He's actually right. He actually might be onto something, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like Thrawn is one of those characters where the execution of his decisions are questionable, or something where it draws a moral, you know, crosses the line, morally speaking.
Yeah.
But the justification or the reasoning behind those decisions, rather, is definitely something to contemplate.
Yeah.
You know, well, thanks a lot for joining in and talking about Thrawn. And this was a really fun episode. So I really thank you for your help.
Of course. Of course. Loved doing it. I love talking about Thrawn.
I couldn't tell.
There's so much to talk about.
So just want to talk for a second. I've been connecting more and people with fellow fans on Star Wars on TikTok as well as Instagram. Currently, I actually have a giveaway for it's right here, actually. So I've got a giveaway for a 3D printed piece of Beskar. Awesome. Right now, the giveaway is actually happening just on TikTok. And it's running until the 12th of March. But in case you can't participate in that, if you're listening, I've got plenty of other giveaways that I've got planned. I've got a 3D printed Millennium Falcon. I've got some Stormtroopers. I've got a few other things that I have planned in the future. So just make sure you please follow us on Instagram as well as on TikTok. And so that way you can keep an eye for future gifts. And speaking of social media, V, how is it that our listeners can find you?
So you can primarily find me on TikTok at Alderaan Survivor, all one word. And then I'm also on Instagram. I don't really ever use it, but also Alderaan Survivor.
Like, I'm legally obligated to just have an Instagram.
Right? Like, everyone's legally obligated to have a Facebook for some reason, even though none of us log into it.
Yeah, I mean, I can get into how there's minor advantages if you're a small shop in terms of like tagging things and stuff like that. But yeah. But speaking of small shop, you also have a small shop. You have an Etsy shop, right?
I do, yes.
How is it that people can find your shop?
I am Crimson Axe Outpost on Etsy. I sell little cups and custom confetti and
like things. Tumblers.
Yeah, like the snow globe tumblers. And then I make little confetti pieces to go inside the little floaty parts. It's fun stuff.
Awesome.
I'm always coming out with new stuff, so.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's really all right. Well, that's all for this episode. Thank you all for joining us and listening in. Thank you, V, for helping us out.
Thank you for having me.
So if you like this episode, please subscribe, share, write a review for us on Apple Podcasts. We really can't thank you enough how much that means to us, because it means that it improves our ranking as well as helps other people find the show. You can also follow us on Instagram at Death Watch Podcast, on Twitter at Death Watch Cast, as well as on TikTok at Death Watch Cast. But also, if you want to chime in, if we forgot to mention something, or if you have a suggestion for a future episode, you can also email us at deathwatchpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. This is the way.
This is the way.